First of all, thank you for giving me the chance to come here and talk to you about wilderness. I assure you that I'm waiting for next July 1 when I have a chance to, after 9 years of being dean, go back and focus on my real love, which is wilderness. Believe it or not, I've never had a job that had the word wilderness in the position description. Everything I've ever done on wilderness, I've bootlegged on top of another assignment. So this next 10 years, I'm really looking forward to having wilderness as my job. It's a strange feeling to be here in 1993 because I was here in 1966 at the Region 6 Wilderness Management Workshop, the first one that the region had. It was an all-male crowd dominated by dominant and dominating line officers. There were more answers than questions, more monologue than dialogue, and we've just come a long way. And Ted, you got an award for a spiritual. We didn't say the S word until about 5 years ago in wilderness because it made people uncomfortable. I'm going to have to leave tomorrow, and I'm very sorry about that, but this kind of illustrates why I'm going to be glad to not be dean. I have to go back, and we have an important donor to the college that's given us $150,000 over the last 10 years, and so we're having a Kurt Birkeland Day at the college, and I will be there to escort Dr. Birkeland. He also got an honorary doctorate from the university. Escort him around for the day. But sometimes people give money to wilderness, and next Tuesday I leave for the World Wilderness Congress, and thanks to a generous donor from Minneapolis, a lady that I took to the wilderness this summer, she gave $20,000, and we're able to take 12 students to the World Wilderness Congress in Tromsø, Norway. So sometimes it's for wilderness that I have to do those things. I want to pass out a questionnaire. You didn't think that a scientist would let you off the hook without getting some data from you. If you would fill this out right away, then I would really appreciate it and pass it back in, because I'm trying to find out, get some baseline information on your knowledge and your feelings and attitudes about the use of wilderness for personal growth therapy and inspiration. So if you could do this, and as soon as we're done, then I'll be making a presentation that will be a plenary session presentation of the World Wilderness Congress, and then showing a video about a wilderness discovery program that we ran with the Curlew Job Corps Center on the Colville National Forest this summer. Then we'll try to group in close, and I'd like to have a good discussion about the particular kind of wilderness use that I'm going to talk about. So give me your best shot on this questionnaire, please. Therapy and inspiration. And this kind of use is something that has really snuck up on wilderness managers, kind of like the fitness movement snuck up on the physical education profession. In fact, it snuck up on them and raced by them, and they never capitalized at all, except belatedly, on the power of that movement. And I think there's not only that reason that we need to pay attention, that this is a $100 million industry, but also that it is those values and the power of the wilderness to transform people that is at the root of this incredible love for wilderness of the American people, and also the obligation to make that power available to a full cross-section of people in our society. So I want to show a few slides here first that will tick off some of the wilderness values, briefly talk about the relationship between wilderness resources and wilderness values. Because we heard John Lowe talk last night about the Wilderness Act mandate to secure the for the American people the benefits of an enduring resource of wilderness. We talk about ecological values. Well, the values are translated to values to people. I don't know what an ecological value is. I do better recognizing a spiritual value or the other kinds of values that are derived from the quality of from a quality ecosystem and from naturalness. Now, I would ask those of you, would anybody like to move up closer? Are you all comfortable where you are? Why doesn't everybody just stand up and just take a breath? You've been sitting down for a while. Because some of this is going to be fairly heavy going. I want to present what I think is a pretty powerful notion to you. I think it's time that we, as wilderness managers, started trying to understand the power of wilderness as both a teacher and a classroom, and how that wilderness can work for personal growth. And over the past several years, with my colleagues, I've been developing a theory about the conditions required for personal growth to take place in wilderness and how that process happens. And I think as wilderness managers, we need to understand that process, because a working hypothesis about how wilderness experiences work for personal growth is no different than silvicultural practices, which are working hypotheses about under certain conditions you do this to the forest and it'll respond in this way. And I think that as wilderness managers, we need to take the leap and begin to start looking into the power of this particular kind of resource and what it can do for people. We all know that there's different kinds of wilderness values. There's recreational, educational, personal growth. How many of you would recognize that as a value of wilderness? I'm going to find out a lot about you on your with the questionnaires, but no, that's good. There's therapeutic. How many of you have run into a special population on a wilderness program seeking therapeutic values from wilderness? Got some hands up. That's good. The therapy after the trail, that's physical therapy. Scientific, we know that we have rich scientific values in wilderness, and we haven't yet begun to tap them like we should. Spiritual, I was glad to hear the S word. Now, what values are we missing? Now, we might hear biodiversity, we might hear ecosystem, we might hear a lot of things like that about the wilderness resources, but I see these as, I don't claim that they're exhaustive, but these are values that are derived from the resources. And of course, the more natural and the higher the quality of the resources, it would follow that the deeper the values could be that would come from them. I'm going to make a presentation now that is very instructional. There'll be a lot of information in it, and then when we get done, I want to I'll be showing a video that will be much more image and emotion about it. So bear with me. This will be a plenary presentation at the World Wilderness Congress, and so we got the world there. Personal growth therapy and inspiration derived from wilderness have long been cited in support of wilderness protection in the U.S. and elsewhere. And today there's widespread belief in the restorative benefits of wilderness experiences. We believe that these values of wilderness, for restoration of spirit, for personal growth and human inspiration, are now more important than ever, and that such use and values will become even more important in the future. In the following, I'll review evidence that continues to accumulate in support of the human restoration theme for wilderness, and propose a process of how we think wilderness experiences lead to personal growth and inspiration. We believe that wilderness supporters, users, managers, and others interested in improving the human condition should more vigorously espouse and utilize wilderness as both a teacher and classroom for personal growth, therapy, and inspiration. The ideas behind the wilderness movement in the U.S. are replete with human restoration, personal growth, and inspiration arguments. Henry David Thoreau wrote of nature as a source of spiritual renewal and inspiration. John Muir is quoted as saying, "Thousands of tired, nerve-shaken, over-civilized people are beginning to find out that going to the mountains is going home, and that mountain parks and reservations are useful not only as fountains of timber and irrigating rivers, but as fountains of life." Frederick Jackson Turner, in what is called the frontier hypothesis, argued near the turn of the century that it was independent pioneers on the frontier struggling against adversity from which American democratic ideals and ideas emerged. Aldo Leopold built on Turner's theme that American individualism emerged from pioneer experience and argued that saving some of the environment that produced and could maintain such qualities. He joined with others in forming the Wilderness Society and became an articulate spokesperson for wilderness to help maintain the quality of American life and thus the quality of Americans. In addition to promoting wilderness areas as benchmarks of naturalness and recreational opportunity, Bob Marshall promoted the physical, mental, and aesthetic benefits of wilderness and its opportunity for complete self-sufficiency not available in urban settings. He espoused the chance to retreat from civilization and the terrible neural tension of modern existence to a place where independent thinkers could develop valuable ideas. Thus, the value of wilderness for personal growth and inspiration has deep historical roots in the U.S. wilderness movement. As the movement grows, and with it the use, management, and size of the wilderness system, these restorative values are also expanded. The increasing intensity of modern life and its accelerating development and loss of natural environment everywhere only accentuates the appeal for areas that have not yet been lost and still retain primal qualities. It's comforting to millions that even if they never visit wilderness, such places exist that have not been compromised by modern life, and metaphorically nurture the idea that a pilgrimage there could restore one's perspective. Such values help account for growth of the U.S. wilderness system from 9 to 95 million acres over the past 30 years and make continued growth to 130 to 150 million acres seem likely. Social trends that have helped drive the growth of the U.S. wilderness system include the emergence of educational and scientific interest and the growth of the citizen environmental organizations. Formal university courses about wilderness are well established. One study in the early 1980s identified 783 university courses about wilderness that were being taught at 400 U.S. colleges and universities. The majority of these courses addressed use and appreciation of wilderness, only a few addressed management. Wilderness studies by the scientific community and wilderness managers are increasing. A study by the Society of American Foresters National Wilderness Research Needs Task Force identified more than 400 active wilderness studies being conducted nationwide in 1991 by managers and researchers in the federal land management agencies and universities. Interestingly enough, we found there were several-fold more studies being carried out by managers than there were by researchers. And the idea was touched on by John Lowe last night, that trying to find out what naturalness is, and that's the first thing we have to do in wilderness management, and that's what so many managers around the country are doing studies trying to get baseline data for. Citizen environmental organizations are one of the strongest social forces promoting wilderness. A study of 42 U.S. national environmental organizations, the largest ones, documented a doubling of their membership during the 1980s to nearly 15 million members, with a total staff of 3,500 persons and collective annual revenues of nearly $650 million. Furthermore, 3,571 voluntary organizations filed tax returns with the IRS in 91 under group categories of natural resources, environmental, and animal related. Collectively, these groups reported total annual expenditures of $2.5 billion in 91 and total assets of $6.7 million. It's no longer just little old ladies in tennis shoes. These trends supportive of wilderness ensure its continued appreciation and growth in our country. And this growth will both reflect and will create additional opportunities for the restorative values of wilderness for personal growth, therapy, and inspiration. The use of wilderness for personal growth and therapy has become so popular that it was touted within the month in a New York Times article as a major new movement in psychology, called eco-psychology or eco-therapy by some. Many wilderness programs have personal growth and therapy explicit or implicit in their goals. It has become a major economic enterprise with literally hundreds and even thousands of programs. There's more than 8,000 challenge adventure programs registered with the Safety Network. It's useful to think about hard skills versus soft skills in wilderness programs, since different programs may emphasize one or the other. I'd categorize hard skill activities as including such things as marathon hikes, rock climbing, ropes exercising, traversing snowfields, river crossings, activities that involve competition, vigorous exercise, and risk, real or perceived. Soft skill activities include group processes such as community circles, group problem solving, reflection, solo activity, journals, and introspective writing. Activity that promotes insight, evaluation, and reflection about one's patterns of behavior, values, belief, and motivations. And I'd ask you to think about yourself and your own preference for wilderness activity. Do you favor hard skills or soft skills? The spectrum of wilderness programs serving personal growth, therapeutic, and inspirational needs includes catered trips to wilderness and wild rivers offered by outfitters and guides, outdoor adventure training for executives and organizations, adventure education aimed at growth of individuals, and wilderness therapy programs aimed directly at special populations seeking recovery and empowerment. Catered trips by outfitters and guides, we don't have complete data on those nationally, but in Idaho there are 400 outfitters who are the owners, operators, and 1,600 guides who are certified employees that sponsor backpacking, mountain climbing, horseback, mountain bike, ski trips, jet boats, rafts, kayaks, and canoe trips. The purpose of these outfitted and guided experiences is not generally focused on personal growth, but you'll always see a photo with a restorative theme in their promotional material, and many of the best operations are now recognizing the personal growth desires of their guests. The executive director of the Idaho Outfitters and Guides keeps track of the many letters that are received from outfitters by outfitters from their guests reporting life-changing experiences. Outdoor adventure training is pursued by many large corporations and companies who use group and individual adventure experiences and the natural environment to develop executives and other employees. Literally tens of millions of dollars are spent annually for such training by U.S. companies. One study documented $100 million spent only by the Fortune 500 companies in outdoor adventure training in 1989. And some of this training takes place in wilderness. This is a photo of the cover of a textbook on the subject. Outdoor development for managers is a strong tradition in England, where a typical focus seems to be based on hard skills, where the aim is to effect a confidence-building experience based on extending oneself So the course participant begins to realize that many of the limitations he feels are artificial and self-imposed. The idea is that one's sense of competence can be expanded metaphorically by success in structured outdoor activities. And that's the focus of many of the kinds of wilderness programs. Adventure education organizations such as Outward Bound and the National Outdoor Leadership School run wilderness programs for targeted audiences such as youth, executives, and occasionally special populations such as disadvantaged or delinquent youths. Literally hundreds of similar programs are run by individuals or small organizations. Data are not available to fully assess the number of such programs, how many of them take place in wilderness, or what impacts they have on people and resources, but substantial activity is involved. Wilderness therapy programs are emerging over the last two decades and have been, and they feature trips for special populations ranging from persons recovering from delinquency, personal tragedy, or substance abuse. Other participants are people in transition and seeking personal strength and redirection for new lifestyles and careers, or to overcome disadvantages imposed by circumstances such as poverty, mental illness, physical and emotional handicaps. A variety of organizations offer wilderness therapy programs, ranging from special trips sponsored by organizations such as Outward Bound to others that may specialize in serving the needs of court systems, hospitals, or special populations such as battered wives or victims of physical or sexual abuse. Does this look like a group you'd like to spend 8 days in the wilderness with? This was a group that was taken out by a friend of mine, Bob Callahan, who runs a program for a wilderness therapy program in the East. And he had a big contract with the, I believe it was the Richmond, Virginia court system to take kids out in the wilderness and to help them, and many of them were helped. We're summarizing and categorizing the more than 300 studies we've found already of participants in wilderness experience programs. The studies are most often reported in university master's theses and doctoral dissertations, presentations to conferences of scholars interested in experiential education, and increasingly in scientific journals, as the quality of science focused on assessing effects of wilderness experience programs has improved. The most significant pattern emerging from these studies is a consistent finding of increased self-esteem and sense of personal control for participants that complete wilderness experience programs. One might question the validity of any individual pre-trip, post-trip questionnaire or interview study, but the collective consistency of findings from such a large number of studies clearly supports the notion that wilderness experience programs do enhance the desirable personal qualities of self-esteem and sense of control. There have only been a few long-term studies of the effects of wilderness experience. Rachel and Stephen Kaplan report in their recent book, The Experience of Nature, on 10 years of research on participants in wilderness programs in Michigan. Their findings and conclusions strongly support the restorative theme for wilderness and natural environment experiences. They found many individuals exhibiting positive changes, some with no change, but they found no negative effects on people taking wilderness experience trips. Enhanced self-esteem, spiritual impact, and restored functioning were among their key findings. Robert Greenway, professor of psychology at Sonoma State University in California, over 22 years took a total of 1,400 college students on 2- and 3-week wilderness trips as part of his wilderness psychology academic program. His findings indicate significant long-term effects in the lives of these students. Most students made lifestyle changes immediately upon returning from the 2-week wilderness trips, such as changing roommates, partners, their major in college, jobs, and otherwise reordered their lives consistent with insights gained on the trip. Students taking trips of 3 weeks or longer frequently experience difficulties integrating back into the intense modern culture from which they came. Thus, one major idea emerging from Professor Greenway's studies is that if wilderness experience programs are too long and thus provide too much attunement to the primal influences of the environment and the more idealized community structure evolving among group participants, it can lead to adjustment problems when returning home to the fast-paced and compelling norms of modern culture. A third study worth mentioning is a doctoral dissertation by Leslie Burton in 1981 that examined 73 graduate research studies of Outward Bound participants, including both normal populations and delinquents. Burton concluded that, in general, Outward Bound type programs do have a positive impact on self-concept, locus of control, self-assertion, and personality. And more than half of the studies of delinquent participants showed a reduction in recidivism, that's meaning going back to jail. Burton noted that 5 studies observed, but did not measure, a decreased capacity of subjects to re-enter existing social systems. So again, there's the idea identified by Greenway. It's hinted at by Burton. And you can, pardon? Okay, locus of control is the sense of personal control one feels over their life. Do you feel powerless or do you feel empowered? So it's a construct, meaning feeling capable of directing your own life. I'm glad you asked that question because I put in sense of personal control either, and I think I'll change this because if you're not familiar with the psychological literature, you may not recognize that. So from all this evidence, we conclude that wilderness experiences can provide personal that we've elaborated based on the examination of the hundreds of studies mentioned above in our own research and experience with wilderness programs, most recently the Wilderness Discovery Program for Poverty Youth with the Job Corps. And of course, any explanation of how wilderness experiences work for personal growth is tentative and based on integration of many complex factors. But just as forest management practices have been developed and refined based on working hypotheses of how the forest will respond to different actions under different conditions, we propose conditions and working hypotheses on the probable effects of wilderness experiences on people. First of all, what is personal growth? We define personal growth as including a range of effects toward fulfillment of one's capabilities and potential. A continuum of personal growth outcomes are possible, ranging from heightened awareness of deficiency needs such as dependency, low self-esteem and autonomy, poor identity, and lack of direction at the low end of the spectrum, to insight, heightened awareness of values, abilities and desires, life purpose and esteem in the middle, to transformation or redirection of one's life at the high end. The motivations for personal change include a variety of reasons, and this is important. For some, it may be more power, possessions, or organizational effectiveness, tougher executives, more competent first-line supervisors, and that's one reason that the wilderness is used by some organizations. But for others, it may be enhanced love and relatedness to humanity. And I suspect that a lot of the programs run out of Holden Village are on the much softer end of the personal growth continuum. Now, we see 5 conditions for personal growth. These are gleaned from studies and also from our own experience and integrating the experience of many colleagues that have run such programs. 5 conditions seem essential for personal growth from wilderness experiences. Although one can never discount the power of wilderness to positively affect people, even when these conditions are not met, We think the fact that on any given trip only some participants will experience growth is explained by the fact that one or more of these conditions have not been met. First of all, you have to have receptive participants ready to grow. Let's see. What are their expectations? Are they ready for change? Is that kid ready for change? Persons struggling with deficiency needs, those who are in transition from one life stage to another, or persons coping with emotional trauma are good candidates for personal growth because they're looking for change, looking for answers. Second, optimum stress in the wilderness experience. Personal growth depends on the right degree of stress from the wilderness experience, physically and psychologically. This threshold will vary with the physical condition, the current emotional state, and the previous experience of each individual. And this is different from ideas that certainly were with us in 1966 on our trip, which that was the no pain, no gain school of wilderness experience. You got to tough it out, the boot camp approach. We think it's the optimum stress is what's important, and that'll be different for every person. The goal is just enough stress to allow successful coping, yet at the same time stretching participants enough to reveal core patterns so they can be considered, evaluated, and affirmed or shaped in many ways. Too much stress can lead to breakdown, and that's what you see here. Three, cultural change, a break from prevailing norms. Wilderness experiences provide a reprieve from cultural influences, especially the prevailing cultural norms that govern so much of our behavior and ways of relating. For many, the slowing down from life's hectic pace and the focus on mere essentials may be liberating. With this liberation from daily patterns, new perspectives may emerge, and participants may open to a new awareness. Four, opportunity for attunement with nature and oneself. With cultural influences removed, participants can experience the natural environment and themselves in true perspective. This is one reason soft skills are so important, so that participants can see the true significance of their lives in relation to the natural order, an experience that is at once humbling, renewing, and empowering. With such attunement, core values may emerge to redirect one's life. And five, experiencing wilderness metaphors. Wilderness experiences and activities can provide metaphors that heighten awareness of desirable qualities for application back home in one's daily life. Here, the optimum stress can be important to provide people challenge, but also allow for successful coping. The most simple metaphor may come from success in dealing with the stress of the wilderness environment, and that can enhance self-esteem and confidence. Metaphors provide new ways of seeing reality and the opportunity to reframe old ways of seeing and doing things. These five conditions enhance the probability that personal growth will occur in a wilderness experience and may explain why personal growth doesn't occur for everyone at any one time. One, they have to be ready for change, receptive participants. Two, they experience optimum stress in the experience and are provided cultural change with a break from prevailing norms. They have an opportunity for attunement with nature and themselves and experience wilderness metaphors. The fact that not everyone achieves personal growth from wilderness programs may be due to the fact that these conditions have not been met. Now, when these conditions are met, we hypothesize that the wilderness personal growth process takes place in the following four sequential and interrelated steps. First, Wilderness experiences can reveal core patterns of personal behavior, values, emotions, fears, drives, and tendencies, thus fostering a heightened self-awareness, which is the first step towards personal growth. The novelty of the wilderness experience strips participants of the normal social basis for personal identity and provides many opportunities for acute personal awareness. In the absence of masks, participants must confront themselves. Core patterns emerge under stress of coping and change. Basic programmed activities that facilitate self-discovery can be employed. Defense mechanisms emerge and can be gradually released as trust builds with companions. Participants can develop insight and glean new perspectives about who they really are inside and who they might become. And why in wilderness? Because it is so far removed from the influences of our daily lives. Second, achieving a growing edge of insight and evaluation. Wilderness and outdoor experiences, by heightening personal awareness of core patterns, beliefs, and values, place the participants at a growing edge where these personal qualities can be evaluated and change initiated if desired. Simply stated, the growing edge hypothesis asserts that as personal awareness is heightened under the stress of coping with the outdoors, core patterns may become clear and be available for evaluation and potential change. Outdoor environments provide unique space for nurturing the growth of the human spirit. People can find a certain peace and calm from the quieting effect of wilderness, the much-needed change of pace, and opportunity for attunement. Values have a way of getting clear in the presence of solitude and silence. That's the Glacier Peak Wilderness. And I believe that was in 1966 on that trip I mentioned. I didn't make the connection till just now. Three, increased social awareness. Wilderness experiences in groups may reveal ineffective patterns of social interaction, which can then be evaluated, shaped, and improved as so desired. In the outdoors, people begin to socialize in remarkably different ways. Status differences dissolve. Stories are told, secrets revealed, pains are shared, new alliances and friendships are formed, existing friendship or family bonds are strengthened, candid interactions and sharing occur, encouraged by the trust developed through the cooperation required on a wilderness trip. The wilderness is a socially ambiguous place, and we are more or less equals and must interact at basic human levels. There are many opportunities to see oneself and others as never before. As participants move toward heightened self-awareness and their growing edge, new and more effective patterns of social interaction can be learned, cultivated, and tested. This is a slide that was taken during one of the Job Corps trips this summer. I like it because you just see the uplifted spirit, and they've been rained on for 3 days, and they've been hiking, and yet they're just the high spirit is just evident. Fourth, experiencing primal influences. Wilderness experiences directly expose participants to the primal influence of nature and the elements, which fosters a sense of humility in relation to the natural world. The exposure to primal influences distinguishes the wilderness as an extraordinary place for personal growth compared to other locations such as a playground, counseling center, classroom, or retreat facility. In wilderness, we must pay close attention and continually adapt and respond to changing circumstances. Awareness must return to the basics, to the essentials, to the primal truths of existence. One feels relatively insignificant in the face of nature's awesome power. The wilderness is indifferent and is unforgiving. Such primal influences permeate the wilderness experience, a constant reminder of humankind's humble place in nature's order. An awareness is experience that is fully present to the moment. One takes their place beside the creatures of the wild. This is the real meaning of inspiration and renewal, to be reborn with renewed perspective about one's place in the natural order. Thus, we propose a process of personal growth from wilderness experience that unfolds as follows. There's an increased personal awareness of basic patterns of feelings, behaviors, values, and beliefs, a first step towards growth. Then the opportunity to evaluate these patterns and affirm or change them while at a growing edge. Then increased social awareness, also to be evaluated for possible affirmation or change. And fourth, experiencing the primal influences of nature that can result in a sense of humility in relation to the natural world and enhance the entire personal growth process. In conclusion, we believe there is compelling support for the notion that wilderness experiences can provide personal growth and inspiration for people. In summary, the human restoration theme is replete in all the historical arguments and in much scientific evidence. We believe it's time to more boldly espouse the value of wilderness for personal growth and human inspiration, just as we espouse the value of wilderness for protecting biodiversity and as benchmarks of natural processes. Can we have the lights? And if somebody would turn on the the videotape, I want to show the video that was made in the wilderness and in interviews with Job Corps students that we took on 8-day wilderness trips this summer from the Curlew Job Corps Center in the Salmo Priest, Kettle Crest Wilderness Areas, and the Pasayton. And then we'll group in for some discussion of this. Go for it.